Hi, welcome to Cocktail Mode, the podcast where me and my co-host Dave, say hello, Dave.
Hello.
That's not how it goes.
I'm not doing it anymore. I fucking hate it. It's a shit joke and I'm not doing it anymore.
That's Dave. We pick a classic game and try and pair it with a cocktail. Today's game of choice is the magnificent Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and we are going to mention every single one of those sequels for at least like 2 seconds each at some point. I'm obviously going to take a little dive into the world of handhelds that Dave's never heard of, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the game's fantastic soundtrack, which Dave feels very passionate about, don't you, mate?
I do. It's really good. Apparently Skate has a good soundtrack as well.
More on that revelation after this.
What skateboarding games do you remember that came out before Tony Hawk's?
Right, now this is, as always, whenever we're going to do this, I make some notes. And I noted down two already. So one is...
Can I take a guess?
Go on then.
720.
720 wasn't the first one I noted down.
Really?
But yes, yeah.
Was the other one California Games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are the first I'll come up with. California Games is one of my favourite games of all time.
Mm-hmm. Very good game.
Absolutely. No way in the world I was ever going to forget that. And I think skateboarding was a bit of it I might have played the most. I had the Commodore 64 version, or Commodore 128. They were identical. And I remember in the skateboarding on that, when you were going on the half pipe, they got a point where you were off the top of the screen and had to do your trick based entirely on timing.
The Amstrad version, which is probably 90% similar to the C64 version. And yeah, there was that moment where you started to go too high to be seen anymore. And you're like, well, I haven't come down on my ass, so I'm good. Up we go again. No, California Games is brilliant, and I would like to do that as its own episode at some point, so we shouldn't talk too much on it. Have you ever played 720?
My core memories of 720 is, do you remember First Class?
Yes, I do. Only because I found episode 1, series 1 of Games Master on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's painful. But as like another video to like a recommended thing, it came up with First Class.
Yeah.
Which sort of made me think, oh yeah, I remember that.
So they played a sort of bits of Daley Thompson's Decathlon as sort of individual events. For anyone who doesn't know First Class, which I imagine is most of the world and anyone who wasn't alive in 1986, but it was sort of a school's quiz show, really.
It was like University Challenge for younger kids, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With a bit more fun to it.
Yeah, every now and again they would come in and they'd say, we're going to do the spring vault, which would have been the gymnastics bit from Daley Thompson's. And then there was skateboarding, which was 720. I've played a bit on it of MAME as well, which is, I mean, for a 1986 game, it's quite good looking, isn't it?
It's a great game. Have you ever played it in the arcade, the original version?
No, so because it's, I assume from my fumbling around on MAME, it was either a spinner or a trackball game.
No, it had a unique joystick. It had a joystick that was not central. Imagine a circle and it being the outer edge of a circle. So when you spin it, you rotate it around.
Oh, okay.
So instead of having a fixed point in the middle that you then do angles from that point, it's fixed straight up and down on the outer edge of a rotating circle.
How weird.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I haven't played it, obviously, for like 30 odd years, but that's really stuck in my mind. I remember playing it quite early days in arcades and thinking, this is brilliant. I love this.
I remember looking at it on MAME and it's like got the demo mode, the attract mode, and it shows the character sort of jumping up and doing not a 900, like a 1080 or something, and then landing again. And when you go and play it on MAME with just your buttons on your keyboard, as you always do when you start a MAME game, you can't even turn, let alone spin like that. So I knew something was up. I knew it must have been I guess a trackball would work, wouldn't it? Because you just roll it around the outside, but not ideal. But that sounds cool. I have got a Namco plug and play that's in the shape of a ball top joystick, but that is rotating as well, and it's got pole position on it.
Oh, yeah.
Twist the joystick to work as the steering on pole position. It's very cool. So, yeah, I'd quite like it. There's a couple of games that have a rotating joystick controller. There was one, I'm never going to remember the name of it, but well, I found it as what it made my list on the Hidden Gems MAME thing, and it's a pinball slash commando style game. See, it's just bizarre. And so it was like a top-down shooter and pinball in one, and I'm pretty sure that was supposed to use a rotating joystick as well.
Is it Gunbarich?
Ooh, that sounds familiar.
It's the characters from Gunbird, and they've got like pinball flippers.
Oh no, that's a different one.
No?
But yes, that was one of my other pinball hybrids from that main thing. But it's probably Gunball. So if you check out Gunball, it's like a that sort of commando go up the screen vertical shooter type thing plus pinball.
Okay.
Very weird, but very, very cool. It's made by Data East, for God's sake. It's going to be brilliant, isn't it? They were high hit rate.
Good pedigree.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that 720 and California Games, I would say, are the obvious ones.
Mm-hmm. There is one other that I genuinely remember from the day called Skate or Die.
Ooh, so I remember seeing Skate or Die.
Which I think was out on the Amstrad Spectrum C64.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played it. I remember it existing. I remember seeing, I think the name was a Thrasher game that was called Skate or Die as well, but I think that was much later on.
Yeah, this is 87. Yeah. Sorry, 88. 72086, a game called Skateboarding for the VCS.
I've got another one called Skate Crazy.
Skate Crazy? Okay.
It's a ZX Spectrum game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it sort of started off in like an open area, like a skate park type thing, really. But I think you were on roller skates for that bit.
Oh, okay.
There were side-scrolling sections that were where you're on a skateboard. Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at a video now. It's all roller skates, so this doesn't count. And I think, my theory is that this is why Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is called Tony Hawk's Skateboarding in the UK. Because when you say skating, if you would have said skating in the 90s, yeah, people would think of roller skates.
Mm, yeah, that's quite probable.
So I think that's why it's got skateboarding very clearly in the name. Apparently it was Australia and New Zealand as well. But yeah, so I'm down to two. So tell me some others.
Well, one of the big ones that's come up, which is a game I do remember us having, is a game called Street Skater on the PS1, which came out before Tony Hawk. A year before it.
Wow.
And I remember having that and it being shit. I bought it for the soundtrack. It had a couple of songs on it that I really wanted and couldn't find because it's pre-internet at the time.
Yeah.
Well, it was pre-internet for me anyway. Just one of those games where I've got a demo disc, had a demo on it. The soundtrack to it was a specific Less Than Jake song, which I didn't know where to go to buy because Andy's Records didn't exactly do imports.
No.
In Bedford. Particularly well, anyway. That was an EA game. So if that had taken off and Tony Hawk's hadn't come along, that could have been the big series that kickstarted all of this.
Well, I happen to know, and I won't pretend to have remembered this. I remember the game, but I would never have picked it as coming out for Tony Hawk's. But Top Skater, the Sega game. So it was an arcade game that had a skateboard to control it.
Yes, that I remember.
Came out before Tony Hawk's.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never have picked that in Mini because the graphics were better, but I think the graphics were better by virtue of being on an arcade machine and sort of late Sega hardware was pretty good, wasn't it? So yeah, that came up for but it was all very much about racing, wasn't it, than tricks and that. If I remember it right, unless I know there was a snowboarding game that was very similar, had a snowboard controller.
Yes, I can't remember what it's called, but I know the one you mean. But I remember playing both of them in arcades. Sort of late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, so that surprised me that Top Skater came out before Tony Hawk's. Skateboarding had kind of three waves, didn't it? And the third wave, it's stuck around ever since. Because it kind of came about in the 70s, and then it had a surge in the 80s. I guess around sort of 720, 86 time it would have been. And I guess 86 was also Back to the Future, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was about to say Back to the Future was the sort of second wave, I think.
Yeah.
Because it'd fallen out of fashion. Yeah. If you ever listen to any interviews with someone like Tony Hawk, who's been around since the late 70s, he'll talk about the waves of popularity when it came and went. So when he was first learning, it was in a massive decline. It'd come out in the 70s, been hugely successful.
Yeah.
And then dropped off. The interest just vanished almost overnight. So when he was learning, it was very much a no one cares kind of thing. You're a weirdo. You've got your own thing. So he was kind of ignored and left to it.
When it came in the 90s, obviously pre Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, when it was having that wave. What were we talking about? What extended the life of the arcades, one of our previous games?
Street Fighter 2 re-kickstarted the industry.
Yeah, it's sort of agreed that that third wave skateboarding would have gone away like all the others if it wasn't for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And the, I think it's the accessibility of games at the time, because the PlayStation was so much cheaper than all the other consoles. It was the de-geekifying of games as well, wasn't it? It was, in the UK at least, it was described as post-pub gaming. It was a big thing, and it came about. And Ooh La La was on the cover of Face, as was Lara Croft. And that whole sort of turn of the century era sort of de-geekified gaming.
I wouldn't necessarily say it was getting rid of the geeky image. I would say it's the raising of the average age of the players. I think because you had people who had grown up in the 80s with gaming and kept gaming.
Yeah.
So rather than be replaced by a new, younger generation who start from scratch, effectively, where the industry carries on rolling, but the audience age stays the same.
Yeah.
You still had people gaming who wanted games, you know, for people in their 20s. And I guess 30s as well.
Yeah.
And games developers started to realize, well, hang on a second, we can do things for that audience and it makes more money than the games we're doing for the children.
I guess that move to proper 3D and be able to make stuff that was less cartoony, more realistic, sort of leaned into that as well, didn't it? Because you've got, you think what games look like, 16-bit games and the equivalent era of PC games, they still had to be quite cartoony to really work, and 3D wasn't a thing. But then 3D come along and it just seemed to really lend itself to those more adult games. And not just because they could be brown and grungy. Did you know the first prototype of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater wasn't Tony Hawk's, it was Bruce Willis.
I knew you'd get that in before I did. I was just thinking in my head, how do I segue into the fact that Bruce Willis and his model from Apocalypse.
That's the one.
Was used because it's Neversoft's first game. Bugger!
Have you played Apocalypse?
I remember playing it at the time. I think did you have it?
I did. Still got it. But yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember playing it. Don't think I bought it myself. Like we said before, you sort of bought one game every like 4 months.
Yeah.
And borrowed everything else from everybody else.
Yeah, I really quite liked Apocalypse at the time. And it was apparently a big success. I thought it had flopped, but apparently it was a huge success, which is how Neversoft got the Tony Hawk's thing, because there's a bit in the mall level of Tony Hawk's, one of my least favourite levels. I'm not a big fan. But you go high up into sort of a ceiling room and there's boxes of Apocalypse piled up and you crash through them. And I wanted to make a joke about how what foresight that was, that those games would still be kicking around in their boxes 30 years later, but sadly apparently it sold really well, so what do I know?
What's your favourite level?
The first
from the original. The first level?
First level. And the first level of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is my favourite level of all of the games, all the games I've played in the series. Mm-hmm. As much as it's small, it feels like a sandbox, and it feels like a sandbox you can learn. And I was playing it earlier today, and it's amazing how quickly everything comes back to you. All the muscle memory, all the lines. And I think it was my third run, having not played it for many a year, like a long, long time. And on my third run of having not played it for that long, I got everything you could get in one single run, because it just came back and it's just like, yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Nice.
I just think that little skate park on that first one is fantastic. I think as an introduction to the game, it's brilliant. And then as you go on and the levels become a bit more, they almost become more linear, some of them. Like the mall is a bit more linear, and there's the big downhill one with all the pipes and things.
Yeah, they're very much, this is the overall route you are going to take. You don't have a choice. Very much a downhill thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't turn around and go back.
But even the city, I don't remember what city it's supposed to be. Is it Minneapolis, or is that where the mall is?
There's a few over various games, and they're all quite jumbled in my head. Because for me, I don't know about you, but there was quite a long time between versions. I had the first one, played that to death. Had the second one, played that to death. And I never bought 3. Bought 4 on the PS2 and Underground, but that was, I think that's about it. So there's a lot of levels that get mentioned in reviews and things throughout the series, and I think I don't remember that at all.
Because the demo wasn't that first level, was it? It was the other skate park, the second skate park.
It is the proper skate park, because the first level, the first actual level in the game is sort of the shitty rundown warehouse, and then the skate park is third level, I think you get.
Yeah, I think so. It's...
So the school in between.
Yeah, that's right. The school's a good level as well, actually.
I prefer the school from Tony Hawk's 2.
Yeah, I can see that.
I was playing it earlier, and as I was tooling around on that, I thought, oh, this is much better than the school on the first game.
No, it's not motion captured, the first one.
Really?
Yeah, they tried it, and it was rubbish. and so they didn't use it. So that's all properly old school animated, all that stuff, which is amazing, because it's really good. I've not played... I've played obviously the various different versions. We won't go on to talk about the Game Boy versions just yet. We'll come back to that later. But I've only ever played Tony Hawk's 1 and 2. And I'm in that, again, as goes the theme, the tiny, tiny majority of people who thinks that the first one's better than the second one.
I think the first one's better than the second one.
Do you? Not a common opinion. I like
both.
Yeah, me too.
And I was really, really happy when the remake was coming out. And they were doing it as 1 and 2. Because I like some of the levels from the second one more than I like some of the levels from the first one. But I didn't want to only have 2, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. So my favourite thing about that remake, which I've played for all of about 10 minutes just before we started recording tonight, on my Steam Deck, which it works brilliantly on.
I was going to say, how does that work?
Yeah,
is it good?
Really good. It's got a warning saying some text might be swollen. If you want to put your name in, you have to bring the keyboard up. But in terms of playing it, it's absolutely perfect. It's really, really good. But good. The one thing that I particularly loved was, because the only thing that I think is missing from Tony Hawk's 1 is manuals.
Yeah, I love manuals.
The fact that you can manual in Tony Hawk's 1, basically, is just... It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's perfect at that point. You don't need to do anything else. And I'm sure, I don't know if somebody has. Apparently they were planned for the original game, but they ever run out of time or budget or something, but they never got put in. Talking of which, have you heard the story about the 900?
Which one?
So the 900, the original, the first landed ever 900, happened months before the game was due to be released. It was basically finished, and he landed 900.
During the X Games,
and so he did that, and he apparently called Activision and said, look, can we get it in? And they said, we saw the X Games, mate, we're already on it. It's going to happen.
Stop the press.
Yeah, and that was like pretty much that situation where it was just like, we have to get this in. Apparently there's people going, because he landed in 900, that's how he got the Tony Hawk deal and all this sort of shit. But it wasn't, it was just nothing like that at all. It just very serendipitous, and it was massive. He became a massive star. I remember the 900 being in the news, like not even realizing that the X Games existed and that skateboarding competitions were a thing still. And then all of a sudden, the game comes out.
I used to be a really big fan of Rodney Mullen. Mm. Loved the stuff he used to do, and probably still does, I'd imagine. Just the sliding the board on its side.
Yes.
And the weird flips and acrobatic stuff he used to do.
Because he was...
He learned to do a lot of things.
I can't remember where I saw it, but because he was in 2. I'm not sure he was in the first one. But
yeah, he's in 2.
He was definitely in 2, and he was sort of billed as the antithesis of Tony Hawk. Because Tony Hawk came from vert skating in the 80s, because he's that old. The 80s sort of vert skating, and that was what he did. And Rodney Mullen was the opposite of that. He was very much the technical street skatey side of it.
Yeah.
And he seems very cool. So I've watched a video of him... in my research, and he seems very laid back and a very cool human being.
Yeah, he's somebody to view who isn't a prick.
I saw some stuff with, he was in 2 as well, Steve Caballero.
Oh,
he seems like a great bloke as well. He seems very laid back and cool.
Yeah. Can you name another professional skater who isn't in any of the Tony Hawk's games?
Definitely not Andy McDowell.
No, it's definitely not Andy McDowell. Jason Lee.
Is he a professional skater?
He was a professional skater. He was still a professional skater when he did Mallrats. But apparently when he auditioned, he never acted before, no like experience of it. Auditioned for one of the parts. I'm not sure if it was Brody. And Kevin Smith just loved him and said, yeah, I want that guy. Love that guy. Get him. We'll get him. But he'd skate because they had that massive open car park where they were filming. He'd just skate in between takes all day long.
I'm trying to think of...
Yeah.
Any, every time I think of one, I'm like, Chad Muska, no, that's Tony Hawk's. Andrew Reynolds, no, that's Tony Hawk's.
No. I'm not sure if he was in any of the games, but Stacy Peralta is a name from the early sort of 80s days on the founders of DC Shoes.
Hmm. I mean, I'm sure there were... You, I think you met pro skaters in the skate games along the way, but I don't remember any of them either. So.
No. It's quite a niche.
Yeah, thing. What skate did do, sort of the capture in the video being part of the culture, skate put that in quite well.
Yes, make your own video thing.
Yeah, and it was, like in the first game, it was like always like an entire park or even an entire, it was just one thing you had to do a trick on or a sequence on, just one item.
Like a stair set or a bench or something.
I thought that was great. I mean, it was a really great way to kind of bring that to life because it did you as much as, because you do, when you see the videos, it looks like they've done all of this first time, doesn't it? It's like you see the edited highlights. They spend all day trying to do a trick and land it once and that's what you see.
That did become one of the big things of skate videos is they always used to do, not so much a blooper reel, but they would show attempts, failed attempts of a trick over and over again. Which is where like a lot of the Bale videos came from.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we've got, you know, 3 hours of this guy falling over and this particular take is hilarious because he nearly gets run over or, you know, jumps over a dog or something.
Yeah.
Something amazing happened on take 7.
Was there 8 like numbered Tony Hawk's game?
Ooh, let me reel it off the top of my head without reading it from a list.
I think there was 8. I think it was because it went 1, 2, 3. Right, here's the, see what my memory's like. It went Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
4 was Fug.
No.
Tony Hawk's Underground.
No. 4 was 4.
Oh, crikey. Okay. So 5 was Fug.
Yep.
6 was Fug 2.
Yep.
7 was Ride?
No, that's much later.
No. Because a Project 8, 8 was called Project 8.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't remember what was 7 if it wasn't Ride then.
American Wasteland.
Oh, shit, yeah. Well, that's not, completely, I've not played any of them. That's not bad going, is it?
I knew there was 1, 2, 3, 4, then Underground, because that's when I literally bought the last one. I bought 1 and 2, 4 and Underground, and then I don't think I played another one after that. So there's Underground 2, American Wasteland, Downhill Jam on the Game Boy Advance. Don't know if anybody that you know has got that.
I don't have that, but that wasn't just on the Game Boy Advance. It was on other things
DS,
well.
Game Boy Advance, and mobile.
Oh, really?
Early mobile, presumably.
I thought it was on lots of things.
Oh, actually, PS2. And Wii, actually. The developer for Downhill Jam on the Wii was a company called Toys for Bob.
So 7 was American Wasteland, 8 was Project 8. Was that it? Then no, Ride was after that.
No, actually. They carry on after that. Proving Ground.
Oh yeah, that rings a
bell.
Which
was the next main one. And then it enters into an area of lesser titles, shall we say. as Tony Hawk's Motion on the DS.
Right.
Tony Hawk's Vert on mobile. Then there's Tony Hawk's Ride. Then there's Tony Hawk's Shred, peripheral-based motion control. So that's on the 360. That might be the Move and Kinect versions. Now that
I remember him being at a show. Probably it might have been E3, because E3 was still going, wasn't it? With a skateboard controller.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about that, but I thought that was Ride.
I thought that was Project 8. Then you've got the first of the remakes. So Pro Skater HD.
Which isn't apparently very good.
I think I've got it on Steam, and I remember playing it, and if I remember right, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure none of the original music's in it.
Oh, okay.
And I think that could have been part of the big problem that I certainly had with it.
That's about 50% not a problem for me.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, for some people, that was their introduction to a lot of this music.
Yeah, and I think some of it's very good.
One of the reasons it has such a special place in my heart is for the music.
Yeah.
Just looking at the list of bands that are on the soundtracks, I've probably seen about a third of them over the years. Bearing in mind there's like 60-odd bands that have been on the soundtracks. I've probably seen about 20 of them.
Well, the thing that struck me about the first one, and certainly the soundtrack to the first one, is a complete lack of hip-hop on it. And the concept of having a skating game now with no hip-hop just seems bizarre. And I know there was in the second one.
Yeah, they were quite quick to rectify that, I think. Well, you say that, there's a Dub Pistols song on two called Cyclone.
Yes.
One of the, like you said, one of the first sort of hip-hop ones that came in, which I absolutely love. And I only heard that on Tony Hawk's Skater 2.
We could do an entire episode on songs that we've discovered in video games.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A few
of my favourite songs ever I heard for the first time in games of one or another.
Yeah. So is one of them The Suicide Machine's New Girl?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What a great song. Fuck's sake. What a piece of shit that is.
You've hated it since the start there, haven't you? This isn't like a new thing that you've done. Actually, no, I don't like that one. You always hated it.
I'm not a huge fan of the whole pop punk oeuvre. If I went up in the lift to the flat above my loft and found Blink 182 playing an impromptu gig with Tony Hawk, I would not be hanging around. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's now, as much as there is nostalgia, because those songs remind you of the game. A good few of them hold up quite well. That Goldfinger track, as much as that was very, very pop punky, very pop ska, holds up really well.
I've got a lot of things I can say about Goldfinger, some of which are interesting, some of which are very personal, like just sort of golden memories. The main guy from Goldfinger is a massive vegan and animal rights activist.
Yeah.
Yeah, not necessarily a bad thing, but some of the lyrics on some of the other songs are a little bit preachy. It did lead to him writing FDN, though, which stands for Fuck Ted Nugent. That's a piece of comedy gold. But apparently, if you met him at the merch store, you'd just want to buy a T-shirt. They'd want to talk about animal rights and animal cruelty, which not everybody's necessarily interested in.
I love a bit of passion. That's good.
Second thing about them, one of the best live experiences I've ever had. I was at the Reading Festival in 2004 and they were playing. And that was my highlight of that whole festival, was that one gig. Great band live. And Finding Superman, which is the song that's on Tony Hawk's. I'd never heard of them before. And that's literally how that started. My love of them started from there.
That's cool.
During lockdown, they did an awesome version of Superman, where it was all like, I'll record my bit at home in my studio. You record your bit at home in your studio, and then we'll edit it all together. A lot of bands did it, but their version of that was fantastic. Given that it was like 20 odd years after the fact as well.
Yeah, but I bet it's been their encore song for each and every one of those 20 years, hasn't it?
It's the song that everyone goes fucking nuts to.
Yeah.
But the weirdest fact about Goldfinger is that the guy writes tons and tons of songs, pop songs, that he sells to people like Jessica Simpson.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, he just writes songs for pop stars. He makes enough money out of that to keep the band going, because you make more money writing a song than you do singing it.
I mean, writing it is where all the money comes from, isn't it? It's that thing with the Beatles, where what's credited as a John Lennon or a Paul McCartney song is quite often not the case. It was just they made a decision to split the royalties between them so that's what they did. They even let Ringo write a few, didn't they?
They let Ringo write one. The old Bill Hicks routine.
Yeah, the great, great Bill Hicks.
George, come down off the ceiling. Ringo's written a song about a mellow tambourine.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, no Beatles on the Tony Hawk soundtrack. I think...
I think a couple would go quite well.
Oh, well, the Helter Skelter would be brilliant.
Helter Skelter, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
I think in tone, Revolution would probably work quite well.
Yeah, back in the USSR. But another thing that really sort of surprised me was that Primus Jero is a race car driver.
Oh, yeah.
Which is one of the songs on the soundtrack I do like. Primus is a thing passed me by for years.
Primus as a thing are genuinely fucking weird. You can play a Primus song to anybody who's ever heard another Primus song and they'll go, oh, that's Primus.
Yeah.
You can just tell straight away. Nobody else sounds like that.
Between Joe as a race car driver and the theme to South Park, there's a good few people who've heard at least one Primus song in their life. Did you know there was a Wii game called Mushroom Men, The Spore Wars?
No.
Wait, no, The Spore Wars was the DS version. So I think the Wii version, I think, was just called Mushroom Men.
Okay.
It's a 3D platformer and it's serviceable as a game. It's good. It works, but it's just a 3D platformer. It doesn't do anything particularly special except the soundtrack. What's his name, the main Primus dude?
Optimus Primus.
Oh, fuck. Les Claypool. And he basically created the soundtrack to Mushroom Men. And what happens in the game, as you move around, it's one of those games where you're in a normal environment, but it seems huge because of the perspective of the character you're in. And so you'll go through the level and you'll activate things. So you'll activate a fan and blow some stuff around, or you'll knock a radio on. And the sounds of all these things build layer on layer into the soundtrack of the game, into the music to the level.
Oh, awesome.
It's absolutely brilliant. And it makes it a standout game. You know, the gameplay is good. That whole thing is so, so clever, and it sounds brilliant. I absolutely love it. Did you play Skate?
You know I played Skate. Because you sent me a Facebook post or a WhatsApp post or something fairly recently with a screenshot of my character from the Xbox 360 version of Skate that I'd created like 12 years ago. I don't know when that was. Was that about a year or so ago?
Yeah, I think it was a while back now, but yeah. When would Skate would have been? 2005, 2006, something like that?
2007, Skate came out.
2007. Good year, 2007. There's a lot of good games come out in 2007.
Yeah.
It genuinely, Skate, I think, and again, I'm a lot of this conjecture because I didn't play any of those later Tony Hawk's games, but I've seen videos of them, and they got a long, long way away from that. I'm not going to say realistic because the controls and the way you played was never realistic, but the environments tried to sort of lean that way. And sort of the scale of what you did was upped a bit, but it wasn't nuts.
They were grounded in reality, although they were ridiculous. Yes. They were exaggerations of real environments.
Exactly that. That's a really good way of
putting it. Philadelphia, I think it is, in Tony Hawk's Pro Skate 2, Love Park is a very real place.
Oh, that's cool. But Skate brought it back to that from where it went and everything that it sort of iterated into what was already. If you don't think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is the best one, then you probably think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 is the best one. That appears to be the general consensus. And I know that if you look at Metacritic scores, I think 2 is one of the highest rated games of all time. I think it's in their list of the, I think it's right up there.
Yeah.
But what was great about them, Skate brought it back to. Skate came back to that ground level street skating that Tony Hawk's did well, and that sort of level of complexity where it was quite complex but still easy enough to do exactly what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
Not just hit some buttons and hope that something happened. I don't know. I don't think Skate is better than Tony Hawk's, but I think those first two games and Skate, if you've got those, I don't think you ever need another skating game.
The Skate games for me, they're always seem like a more realistic alternative. Like you'd never play one or the other. You'd play both, but you'd play those different things.
Yeah, the fact that you could jump from the floor to the top of a ramp on Tony Hawk's, the scale of Skate was more realistic, wasn't it?
I think is
what I was saying. It's what I loved. I remember when we played Skate and Tony Hawk share that one of the games that I played demos to death of. I played the demo of Tony Hawk's to death, and I played literally, you know, it finishes, load it up again. Because of that scale, you could, you know, grind a curb. And it was in the streets, so there were curbs and roads everywhere. So there was always something to grind. Because obviously, with Tony Hawk's being so early, it was really obvious what was a grindable surface and what wasn't, and what you know, was things were, even like the helicopter and the aeroplane and two, they were only sort of broadly those things, and they were part of a skate park first and that second, whereas skate, everything looked like it was in a real world, and then you could skate it if it was broadly had an edge on it.
Yeah, they're believable physical objects.
Yeah, I'm really good. And skitching was cool as well, because that's something I always wanted to do in Tony Hawk's, with the two or three cars that were about, and you could never actually do. It's just weird. The control system was so clever, with the flicking of the stick, rolling around the edge to do certain things. It just worked really, really well, really clever. I don't use the analog sticks to play Tony Hawk's. So I use the D-pad
still. I do, yeah. And I found that really fucking hurts after a while.
Those calluses that you built up over all those years. They've gone soft.
Yeah, my mouse finger on my right hand's fine, but my left thumb is delicate and soft these days.
It's interesting, a game that popular, relative complexity of it. It uses a lot of buttons, and I know that's a really basic way of describing the complexity of a game.
I would argue that the control method of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater is akin to Street Fighter 2. In complexity.
That's fair, I guess, yeah.
In fact, yeah, I think the closest analogy you can get for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater to any other game is a beat-em-up, a really complex beat-em-up.
Interesting.
Like the hand-eye coordination and the input combinations that are required.
Yeah.
No other game does that like that.
No, I mean, that's a fair shout, mate. I'll give you that one. You've reminded me of a game called Extreme Sports.
Okay.
On the Dreamcast and on the Game Boy Color. There was a weird...
Fucking knew there'd be a Game Boy version.
Thank you. and it's the Game Boy Color version where there was a sky surfing game.
What, like skydiving and then surfing before you open your parachute sort of thing?
Yeah. So you're falling out of the sky and you've got to do tricks. Yeah, and what it is the tricks is as you fall down... button presses come up like combos, sort of a bit like a combo on a fighting game, but also like a rhythm action game. And it really, really cool. It was a game by WayForward, who, if you know the Shantae games, or if you've heard of those.
Shantae? No.
Yeah, they're Metroidvania games. They're very good games, but for the most part, they're very good games. Mm. But before that, they made this game called Extreme Sports.
My instant thought is Princess of Persia.
It plays nothing like that.
No, but yeah, that's the overall look,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But yeah, they're very good games, nearly all of them, really good. And they started off on the Game Boy Color. I think the first Shantae was a Game Boy Color game, and it now goes for hundreds and hundreds of pounds.
Hell. And the rest?
Yeah.
Rare Game Boy Color USA game, Shantae by WayForward, complete boxed 100%, £1,799. Whether anybody pays that is a different question.
Yeah. But it does, I know it goes for hundreds. So yeah, that's madness. But anyway, that company, WayForward, do very cool games. They do a lot of very fun stuff. And they did this extreme sports game, and it's very smart. And I think there's skateboarding in that, and I think it's just a half pipe, much like California Games.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're talking about fighting games. That sky surfing thing, it reminded me of that, because you have to input that sort of control to do the tricks. Do you know what I don't remember is talking about skate and how good it is?
Any of the music on skate?
None of it at all.
They may not have gone down the same route.
I guess not.
It would be an odd decision not to do, but it might have been a cheaper way of making it. I don't know. It looks like they've done a pretty good job. Bad Brains, Black Flag, Cheap Trick, Bowie, Devo, Eric B and Rakim. Oh, there's a name from the past.
Booker T and the MGs, got Green Onions.
Motorhead, Nirvana, NWA. Oh, NWA, Express Yourself.
Oh, hello.
So, yes, it has a very good soundtrack.
Yeah, it's got Dead Prez on there, hip-hop. Mm. That's a great song. Bit of Gangstar on there. Yeah, so this is a great soundtrack, and yeah, I don't remember any of it. Got Hustling, got Rick James on there. Pretty Vacants on there. So there we go. Great soundtrack.
Yeah.
And then we completely forget about it.
I'll have to replay that, because I don't think I gave it much of a play, if I'm honest.
Recommend putting some effort into Skate, because it's a very, very good game. And I think I would say start with the first one. I know Skate 3 did similar things to Tony Hawk's. The scale got bigger and the areas got larger and there's more to do in it.
Mm.
Got more complex, which, as you will know by now, I'm not always a huge fan of added complexity. I think...
Well, yeah, I mean, to be fair, it doesn't always improve, does it?
No.
Sometimes the simpler design decisions are better.
For California Games, it was literally just do a hand plant or do a kick turn, wasn't it? That was pretty much all you had.
Yeah, you could do a kick turn on the ramp, in the air, or a hand plant. But it was,
yeah,
the hand plant was quite difficult because it was how long do you hold it?
Yeah.
And the kick turn, either on the ramp or in the air, was just the timing. It had to be an exact point. But yeah, I loved California Games. That was great.
You ever play the Lynx version?
I know that Lynx version is very, very highly thought of. I don't think I ever played it.
It's only 4 events.
Okay.
So it's only hacky sack and surfing, skateboarding, and BMXing.
I loved the surfing. The surfing was fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant stuff.
Best event, yeah, I think.
Really cool. Yeah, I think so. Certainly, and again, the Lynx version, it is different. On the old version, that I played it most on the Commodore 64. The angle that you went up, if you did a jump on a surfboard, you had to do the opposite angle to land it, and it was, you had to be dead on the Lynx version. That was absolutely not the case, so you could go absolutely nuts. But I scored a perfect 10 on the Commodore 64 version. It's one of the highlights of my gaming prowess.
In 1987.
Yes.
It's been downhill ever since.
Yeah. On the footbag as well, I clocked the scoreboard. I got however many nines you had to get to clock scoreboard on the footbag. And I did that too. Skateboarding was, and again, I played it, and I did because it was just, you had a set amount of time, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I just did basically kick turns for the entirety of that time, with, you know, a good half of it being off the top of the screen. So I can't imagine you can score much higher than whatever I got for that either, because I don't know what else you could do really other than just do kick turns for the entirety of the time you were given.
I think after you start going off the top of the screen, if you start doing hand plants, so like the fly off the ramp,
yeah,
kick turn in the air, come down, takes a few seconds. If you're doing a hand plant, you're back on the ramp and going the other way a little bit quicker.
But didn't hand plant slow you down, so you couldn't really go just one side to the other doing hand plants? I don't remember playing it
in that kind of way. No. It's very much a how much can I score without dying? Well, not dying, but crashing. Have you seen, there's a fairly modern one called Session?
Yes. I think I've talked to Daniel about it, going back to my nephew, and he said it's too realistic, it's too difficult, I think. Is that the one? I think because there's been a couple of attempts recently to...
Yeah, there's Session, which is the more realistic one, and then there's Skater XL.
Yeah.
Which I think is the more sort of trying to be Tony Hawk's, from what I understand. I haven't played either of them. They've both been variously on and off my wish list on Steam.
Mm.
But yeah, I've never thought to buy them.
No.
And probably never will now that I've got the modern remake of Tony Hawk's 1 and 2. I don't need any other skate games now.
No, absolutely. I mean, the best modern skate game I've played is Ollie Ollie World, which is superb. Genuinely can't recommend Ollie Ollie World enough. It's just brilliant. It's got a fantastic style to it. It's all of its own as well. It's not trying to be Tony Hawk's. It's completely different. But it's just so satisfying to pull off tricks and to find routes, and it's got that similar sort of exploration feel that Tony Hawk has, where you're figuring out what the best way to do things is.
Yeah,
it just makes you happy. It's a game that makes you smile and makes you happy. It's got a really cool vibe about it, and I genuinely can't recommend it highly enough. But yes, very, very different to Tony Hawk. But it's like, have you played any of the Ollie Ollie? Because there's Ollie Ollie and Ollie Ollie.
I'm just checking now, because I'm pretty sure I've played either the first one or the second one.
Sort of, the first two were very two-dimensional, side on. And
yeah, when you started saying about like finding routes now, I thought, aren't these 2D and
yeah,
like downhills, so there's no real route?
The first two aren't like that, but this Ollie Ollie World is a completely different game.
Okay.
A completely different visual style, completely different sound. It's a very much more polished thing. But that sort of side-on skating sort of thing that Ollie Ollie did is what Tony Hawk's Pro Skater on the Game Boy Color is.
I knew we'd get there eventually.
Thank you. and so it's just completely 2D, and it's not great. not to put too fine a point on it. It's, in fact, I think that's Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 on the Game Boy Color, is that, because the first one is particularly bad. It's split up into downhill racing, which just doesn't work because the screen's too small, and it's just crap. And a little half pipe, which looks, for all intents and purposes, like California Games. It's like almost exactly the same sort of look and style as California Games, that side-on half-pipe, which works okay.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 is the side-on one, mm-hmm. which works as well as, you know, you would expect that sort of, lots of grinding, you know, all that sort of stuff. I quite liked it. I think it, if you don't, as long as you're not expecting Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, which, you know, if you've ever seen a Game Boy Color, you really shouldn't be.
That's the thing with a lot of these, the handheld versions of things, isn't it? Is whatever your expectation of the game based on its other versions.
Yeah.
So if you're expecting Grand Theft Auto on the Game Boy, you're not going to get it.
No. Expectation is the mother of disappointment. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 on the Game Boy Advance, however, is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, we talked in the last one about how Max Payne took the concept of Max Payne and took it into isometrics for the Game Boy Advance. And whenever Game Boy games go isometric, you know that somebody's paying attention and they're playing to its strengths. It's fantastic. It's like full levels, open. You can skate around doing all the tricks. You've got, obviously, the Game Boy Advance had triggers as well, so you've got, you know, extra buttons available to you to do the stuff. It looks brilliant. The animation's brilliant. It's just a really, really great version. Probably one of the best games on the Game Boy Advance.
Really?
Yeah. It is Tony Hawk's. It doesn't feel like a compromise just by being in isometric view. It feels like a Tony Hawk's game. It has that feel to it. Obviously, it hasn't got the music on it, and there's no sample music in it at all because it can't handle that. But it has the feel of Tony Hawk's that you want from one of those games, and it's great. So yeah, that's a recommendation from me. Did you give much thought to your cocktail?
I did do a bit of internet searching
because
I did want to find something that was vaguely... I couldn't think of anything off the top of my head.
No.
Basically.
It's a difficult thing. There is a gulf in the oeuvres of skateboarding and cocktails, isn't there? There's not a lot of... There's not a lot of crossover. No, that's a very sparsely populated Venn diagram.
Yeah, one of the first things I tried to find was something that related to the man himself. And in searching for that, I found that Tony Hawk doesn't drink cocktails. He's very much a beer guy, or was very much a beer guy. He co-created a beer with somebody.
Oh, cool.
But he's a very, very keen whiskey drinker.
Oh.
These days. And if he is pushed for a favourite cocktail, he'd normally come out with the old-fashioned.
Yes.
But that's not what I went for.
Okay.
Because I thought, that's really boring and I don't like them. Really not keen on whiskey, to be honest. It doesn't mix well with anything that I've found so far anyway. But no, I did a little bit of searching around and I found an article on a food website from a couple of years ago, which was celebrating Tony Hawk's Pro Skater turning 21.
Okay.
So this guy came up with this cocktail that actually doesn't sound too bad. I'm going to give this one a go. And the name is a pun based on an awful, awful song.
Right.
From the early to mid 2000s. Do you remember Heaven is a Half Pipe by OPM?
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the reaction. The drink is called Heaven in a Half Pint, which I thought was quite good. Ignoring the reference to the terrible song, I thought that was quite good. But then I read the list of ingredients and thought, actually, this sounds really nice. I'm going to give this a go.
Okay. It's
2 ounces of silver tequila.
Okay.
1 ounce of dark rum. 2.5 ounces passion fruit juice. 1.5 ounces mango juice. One ounce lime juice. And then 1 ounce of simple syrup. And then it's got sweet mint leaves to basically infuse with the tequila to make that sort of a minty tequila. And I think that would be quite nice. So I'm going to give that a go because tequila and rum are things that I can get hold of fairly easily.
Yeah.
The various juices aren't difficult to get. And I think it sounds like it'll be quite up my street.
Hmm.
It doesn't have gin in it for starters, which is pleasant.
It sounds very, very fruity to me.
Yeah, it will have a lot of fruit, but I think if you play around with the levels, you could make that quite a bit more alcoholic and less fruity. Like, I might take out the syrup. I don't think you need sugar and water in there when you've got tons of natural sugar in all the juices.
Passion fruit isn't particularly sweet either, is it?
No, but mango is quite a distinct flavour. Lime is quite a strong flavour.
Yeah, but again, not really sort of sweet fruit, is it? It could end up quite tangy, I guess.
I'll give it a go. I do think it's worth a look.
I have to say, mate, I'm impressed with your research on that one. Some good hunting.
Cheers. I did find a quite interesting video interview with Tony Hawk's. I keep saying Tony Hawk's. It's Tony Hawk.
Yes.
Yeah, I found a video interview where he's talking about. It's an advert. Effectively, there's the subscription services you sign up to where you get like tasters of whiskey and things like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He was a customer. He was just a customer of one of these services, and they was sort of looking at the names and were like, it says Tony Hawk. Is that like the Tony Hawk?
It can't be many, can there?
Yeah, well, that's it. So they reached out and said, look, you know, now it's your name. Do you want to do some sort of promotion stuff? He was like, yeah, all right. I can't remember what it's called. It was like Flavio or Flavio or something.
Yeah,
right. I thought it was pretty good. It was just, he just signed up to it because he wanted to try whiskies.
That's cool.
And then ended up promoting. Because one of the things they've said, like, we're very keen to avoid working with, like, you know, YouTubers and influencers and people like that. So we saw Tony was an actual customer. Like, yep, that's the guy we want to get talking about our stuff. Which I thought was quite good. I like that approach.
I'll tell you what I like about that. And so many of those, the skaters of that era and the skaters that are in the game are now recovering alcoholics and completely teetotal. It's interesting to find he's got a healthy relationship with alcohol, which we promote on this podcast.
Oh, definitely.
As we're all about that. I came up with my choice of cocktail almost in a fit of rage.
Wait. Is it the new girl?
I couldn't find any. I was so frustrated by the lack of a decent pun cocktail. I couldn't find anything that worked. And I was, frustrated by the fact that as much as there are many, many flip cocktails, which we mentioned that flip
as an idea.
Yeah. But because it's egg white in it, it's not the right vibe for the game.
Yeah.
So I've just, honestly, I just thought, fuck it, Jaeger Bomb. That's what I'm going with.
Okay.
Because I think it fits the game perfectly. I think it's of that era. It's grungy, it's nasty, it's rough around the edges, it's got very little class. I just think it, as much as they're all now quite a lot of recovering alcoholics and good luck to them, and I think at the time there would have been a lot of Jaeger bombs flying around because that was what was going on, and they're horrible. It's a disgusting drink. Don't have any. Half a can of Red Bull with a shot of Jägermeister dunked in it and then drink it. Never do it. Avoid it at all costs, but I'm having it anyway. That's my cocktail of choice for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
No, that's fair. I mean, to be fair, Jägermeister do sponsor a lot of these sorts of events, like X Games and things like that.
Do they?
So there is a lot of crossover. And Red Bull, heavily involved with extreme sports.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think Monster more so now these days.
So I actually went for a job interview with Monster not so long ago. Yeah. They spend a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of money on advertising and an absolute shit ton of money on sponsorship of like X Games and extreme sports and things like that. So where they put all of their advertising and promotional budget into that rather than,
and it clearly works.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you've got an extreme distaste for the motorsport of speedway. Human greyhound racing, you called it last time we talked about it.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for speedway. None of it's good.
I enjoy Speedway, and it's almost like they own the sport, the Monster sponsorships. That's it. So yeah, that as well, absolutely, is part of my reason for choosing the disgusting drink that is the Jaeger Bomb. As much as it pains me a little bit that a game as beautiful and brilliant as Tony Hawk's Pro Skater gets a drink as disgusting as a Jaeger Bomb, but yours sounds nicer, so one of them is two. But I just think, I do genuinely think, because it's not, you couldn't put a classy cocktail with
I don't think it should be a classy cocktail,
does it? No.
I was genuinely on the fence as to whether or not to even use a cocktail.
Yeah.
Like, for me, yeah, Tony Hawk's is like, it's a bottle of Blue WKD or...
Yes, right.
It's a simple drink. It's not It's not a complex, multi-layered, you know, interesting cocktail. It's a very simple thing done well.
And you made a joke in the last episode about shotgun and counter skull on a curb in Cotton End. Yeah. That's Tony Hawk's. Tony Hawk's is a shotgun can of beer. Is what Tony Hawk's is. It's a Jaeger bomb. It's a shotgun can of beer. It's, you know, flaming Sambucas. It's not even, you know, it's that kind of thing.
It's a cheap can of lager.
Yeah.
Bought from an off-license, drunk on the curb. Definitely. It is interesting you pick that because I'm sure... Well, I'm not sure, but I think there's something similar to a Jaeger bomb called an acid drop, which could be an alternative name for the Jaeger bomb because it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But that's also, it's one of the drop-in moves in skateboarding.
Oh, is it?
At the top of a vert ramp, dropping in a certain way is an acid drop.
That's an interesting one. I'm going to have a quick Google of that one.
But it is interesting that you came up with the Jaeger bomb because when I was searching for cocktails related to Tony Hawk's, I literally just put cocktails relating to Tony Hawk. There was an article when Vermont or some state or city was hosting the X Games, and they basically put a thing out to all the local bars and eateries and said, "Oh yeah, come up with some cocktails for the X Games."
Yeah.
And I was looking at that list, and there's some ones on there that are quite interesting. A lot involved Monster, which I've never drunk and never will, no. So I couldn't possibly recommend it. That's the thing. I don't want to recommend a cocktail that I know is going to taste like arse.
I just did. but that's my prerogative. No, an acid drop is a shot of Pano with lime cordial dropped into it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's only marginally better than a Jaeger bomb.
Yeah, although it does. My other experience of Pano was around the time of Tony Hawk's as well, which is, so that could have done, because I read in a magazine that kids in France were snorting Pano, and I thought, I've got to give that a shot.
You fucking try anything, won't
you? Absolutely, yeah. Anyway, that fucking stinks.
The only thing I've ever snorted, and I did it as a joke, you know the whole... drinking a shot of tequila thing with the salt, the lime, and the shot.
Yes.
There's a comedy version of that in Caddyshack, the old 80s film.
Yes.
Where Chevy Chase snorts the salt, squirts the lime in his eye, and just throws the tequila over his shoulder. And I've always thought, if I'm ever in a bar and somebody says, "Oh, let's get tequila shots," I'm going to do it.
God.
And I did it. Oh, fuck me. I have no experience of snorting coke, so I can't say what that's like. I imagine it's finer grain than salt.
Yes.
Because fucking hell, you just wouldn't do it
more
than once if it was like that. Oh, it's horrible.
I snorted like white sugar once.
Yeah, that'd be just about as bad.
Yeah, well, you imagine the salt didn't crust up in your nose and make it impossible for you to breathe out of one nostril for 3 days. But these are all things that pair well with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, the surrounding culture of skating, the music, the lifestyle, it is a punk experience. It's not high-class cocktails in a bar.
No.
So
absolutely not. It was always going to be a stretch.
Yeah.
But well done us, I say.
Yeah, good enough.
And whoever it was that invented that cocktail that you come up with.
Harmony Colangelo. On a website called thetakeout.com. I'm quite happy to do that because I think I've might have genuinely found a cocktail I want to drink.
Yeah, and we've genuinely not got cocktails from Difford's Guide for once.
Yeah, he's going to be so disappointed.
He will be, yeah. He'll be gutted.
Dear Cocktail Mode, I was going to sponsor your podcast. But that prick Andy came out of a fucking Jaeger bomb.
It's on his website. And it's.
Is it?
Yeah, you know, have you seen that he gives a rating to all of the cocktails?
Vaguely, I haven't really spent much time reading.
Yeah, so on Difford's Guide, every cocktail has got his own rating for it, and then you can put in your own out of 5-star rating for it. He rates the Jaeger Bomb a 2. It's the lowest I've ever seen anything on there.
Wow.
Did you ever do a Strawpedo? So you get, it was always a WKD Blue for some reason. It didn't have to be. It could be any bottled drink, but it was WKD Blue that was the strawpedo drink of choice. And you put a straw in the bottle.
Oh, I think I do know about this. It's something to do with the amount you can drink if it's got an air outlet.
Yeah.
You can literally shotgun it.
Yeah. So yes. You put the straw down at the bottom of the bottle, and then sort of hook it. So it's got a bendy straw, always works best.
Yeah.
And then you make a seal over the top as you drink it, and the air forces out. So that's how you do a strawpedo.
Right. Yeah. I've seen it done. Didn't know what it's called.
Yeah. You can drink a bottle in literally a couple of seconds, but, yeah. For some reason, the method of drinking them back with the old football team we used to play with was a two-man job. So you got your straw in your bottle of whatever it was you were drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And with the end pointing out to let the air out, but then someone blew into that end. So it wasn't just that the air got out,
forced.
It forced it into your face as quickly as possible. That's a Tony Hawk's drink.
Yeah, that's a Tony Hawk's experience, definitely.
So I think next time out, we will do flashback.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, we're going to do flashback. In my life, I think one of the games that I have been best at, that I've played to a very high level, I think flashback, obviously a million miles away from that now, but when it was new... It must have been one of the first games I had for my Super Nintendo. So I had it for a long time before I could afford anything else. So.
Hmm.
I played it a lot.
So presumably we'll cover another world in the same sort of...
Yeah, I think another world is that there was sort of lots of similar games. Well, not lots of, but there are other similar games across over.
Isn't there a Flashback 2 on the PlayStation?
No, it's called something else. Fade to Black.
Is that it?
I think, but I can never remember if that's a sequel to Another World or a sequel to Flashback.
Apparently there is an actual sequel to Another World. I can't remember what it's called. But you play as like the potato-headed guy.
But yeah, let's have a quick look at Fade to Black.
Yeah, Fade to Black sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's a sequel to Flashback. So it's Flashback. It's early PlayStation game. I've never played it, so let's fix that before.
Yeah.
See, yes, as usual, we'll touch on not just Flashback, but various other versions and spin-offs and similar games, really, because it was kind of almost a subgenre, wasn't it, on its own, and a type of platforming that I actually enjoy. So we will definitely cover all aspects of that next time out. So I hope you join us. We're hopefully to have that live in at most 2 weeks' time, and we can chat about Delphine Software's wonderful masterpiece. Say goodbye, Dave.
Goodbye, Dave.